Blog Talk Radio.
Ken Hudnall, this is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West, the most haunted city in the country. Well, we're still talking about UFOs. We talked about Operation High Jump last night. For those that missed that show, Operation High Jump was an American military expedition in 1946 to Antarctica, led by Admiral Richard Byrd. Now, supposedly, it was to test gear to be used in cold conditions. And for that, we needed 13 ships to include an aircraft carrier and between 4,000 and 5,000 military personnel. They took enough resources with them to stay 8 months. We're also going to establish Little America Number 4. Well, after having had some losses of personnel and equipment, they left after 8 weeks. On the way back north, Admiral Byrd gave a newspaper interview where he talked about craft that could fly from pole to pole without refueling. Terrible craft that would one day attack North America. When he got back for debriefing, the Pentagon told him to shut the hell up. Now, there were other stories that had to do with British SAS having had a pitched battle in an underground cavern in Antarctica. Only one survivor. Now, there's been a lot of discussion about the fact that after 1943, the Nazis diverted a lot of resources that were taken to, we believe, Antarctica, to build a permanent base called Base 211. Now, things became so tense, I guess is the word, that during the geophysical year in 1958, we detonated 3 nuclear devices in Antarctica. Now, there hadn't been much discussion about that. In fact, almost all the records about Operation High Jump are classified until recently. Now, the theory is if there was a base, the electromagnetic pulse from those three nuclear weapons would fry their electronics. Now, that, of course, raises a lot of questions. Number one, if in fact there was a base beneath Antarctica, is it still manned? Well, in theory, 1979, an expedition left Germany to go there to pick up some stuff that was left behind. But that the base itself had been abandoned. Now, if in fact that is correct, where did the staff go? Now, at the end of World War II, there are a lot of missing Germans, many of whom wanted for war crimes, that were never found. Several regiments, the most fanatical, Waffen-SS, disappeared, as did, as I mentioned last night, several all-female units, which were marched to the port, loaded on board ships, and vanished. Where did all these people go? Several U-boats surrendered several weeks after the war ended in Argentina. What were they doing there? There wasn't a patrol area. We sent personnel down immediately to question them, and they refused to admit anything. Now, there had been a lot of research done by the Nazis into jet aircraft, and in fact, had they been able to get their later developments into production, the war might have ended quite differently. Both the Germans and the Japanese had jets, but there were so few of them that it really didn't make a major impact on what was taking place. As I made mention, there was also discussion about the fact that the Nazis had actually put a man into orbit, German test pilot. We talked about that in several interviews he did with Der Spiegel. And for years, there were rumors that they may well have established bases on the moon. Now, before you laugh at that, even a Pulitzer Prize-winning astronomer by the name of John O'Neill publicly reported seeing structures on the moon that appeared to be artificially constructed. One was a bridge that was was 12 miles long. During the 1950s, a lot of UFOs seen over the Earth were tracked back to the moon by government tracking stations. There's one photo of a saucer-shaped craft hovering over the moon taken by a civilian astronomer. The spaceship in question that hovering directly over the moon was estimated to be several miles long. It was called a city ship, designed to transport thousands of people who could live for extended periods in space. Now, through the 50s and the 60s, There were more moving, flashing, and stationary lights seen on the moon by civilian astronomers, usually inside craters. And then there was also a mysterious glowing cross. Soviet American spacecraft in orbit over the moon began to photograph mysterious structures on the moon, which, as you might guess, were censored by NASA, but obtained by scientific researchers who demanded the evidence from this so-called civilian space agency. For those who never read NASA's charter, yes, it's called the Civilian Space Agency, but it's actually part of the Department of Defense. When forced, NASA released photos without comment. Many of the structures can be only seen when the photos are blown up to a much larger size. Most of the Gemini and Apollo astronauts admitted they saw UFOs while they were in orbit. Gordon Cooper was very public about it. He specifically stated he believed they were intelligently controlled craft. James McDivitt, another astronaut, also took UFO photos while orbiting Earth. One Soviet astronaut mission in the 60s was specifically designed to set a new record for time in orbit, was aborted right after their craft ran into a UFO. Private researchers with powerful receiving radio equipment claimed that Soviet cosmonauts were followed into orbit by UFOs that surrounded them and began to bounce them back and forth as if they were playing a pinball game with the Soviet craft. As you might guess, the cosmonauts panicked and immediately went back to Earth. The U.S. spacecraft Ranger 2 took over 200 photos of moon craters that had domes inside of them. These were not naturally occurring domes. Now, these photos were nothing new. They were reported in news media by French astronomers almost 70 years ago. There were 33 moon dome photos from Lunar Orbiter 2 released without comment in Washington in 1967. June 1st of 66, NASA admitted to the news media that astronauts had seen UFOs. But then later they contradicted themselves and said they hadn't. If you save all the official releases from NASA and you put them side by side, it's clear that they don't really know what they're talking about. Gordon Cooper specifically stated, "I believe in extraterrestrial life because I saw a spacecraft." That was on his 16th Gemini orbit. And then there are photos of the laricuspids taken by satellites on the moon showing strange spires that had been found to form perfect geometric patterns. These tall white spires resemble the Washington Monument, photographed on the lunar surface along the mysterious straight roads or tracks that cut through craters and hills and valleys and rock piles without a twist. Some of the domes had flashing lights. Several NASA photos showed long cigar-shaped objects parked on the moon, which later left in other photos. Then there's a photo of a pyramid-like object that appeared on the dark side. Now, the lunar dark side is always hidden from Earth and our telescopes. A perfect place for extraterrestrials, or anyone else for that matter, to construct secret bases. Now, lack of atmosphere is no problem in closed domes with artificial environments, though there has now been whether or not the moon has an atmosphere of some sort is now been called into question due to the fact that water vapor has been seen escaping from some of the craters, and to have water vapor, there has to be air. Now, even NASA has admitted that we now have the technology to construct underground bases, artificial air conditioning, like the military has built on Earth. But I might also point out, in the late 50s, the Army Chief of Staff told the Army to prepare plans for a moon base to be permanently staffed. There's an unconfirmed report that when Buzz Aldrin opened the door after landing on the moon in 69, he immediately saw a transparent etherical being staring at him. Sort of a welcome committee, I guess you could say. Soviet radio operators have picked up transmissions that would amaze everyone. One mysterious radio message from the moon was broadcast on French public TV once before it was censored out. Now, that transmission appeared to be a mysterious, clearly spoken alien language. The French historian and author Robert Giraud published a transmission that's been suppressed in the U.S. You'd be amazed how many revelations the rest of the world knows about that we don't. Now, Apollo 15 astronaut Alfred Worden was in charge of telecommunications, had his attention drawn by a breathing sound that came over the radio and a long whistle. A sentence was constantly repeated on one note, varying from small to shrill tone and from lightly stressed sounds to exclamations. The lunar module tape recorder actually recorded the transmission. And the Warden transmitted it to NASA. There were 8 separate words. Now, linguistic experts have been unable to translate the message. But some public radio broadcasts on the moon weren't censored. According to one of them, the domical structures are partially filled up. Breaches either flowed into these structures before they were built, or the domes are younger than the floor. Areas oval or elliptical. So that raises the question, what are the domes and structures that are being referred to? Apollo radio public broadcasts from the moon used terms and phrases like flashes of light and buildings and roads and tracks and huge blocks. When asked, space program officials said these were metaphors for geological formations. NASA, under its charter, can't admit when it has evidence of aliens. The scientist responsible for teaching geology to the astronauts admitted he was totally baffled by those terms. Dr. Farouk El-Baz was a geology expert. And he said, not every discovery has been announced. The news reporters asking about the flashes of light, his response was, there's no question about it, they're not natural. Apollo 15 astronaut James Irwin radioed back to Earth, that's the most organized structure I've ever seen. So how could the most organized structure Irwin had ever seen be a natural formation? And how could geologic formations have lights that flash on and off? Well, NASA tried its best to cover up the truth by replying that it was volcanic action that could cause the flashes, but in other statements, they said there's no volcanic activity observed on the moon because it's a dead planet. Domes up to 1,500 feet high, taller than our skyscrapers, were too high to deny they were bigger than any building on Earth. A radio tower appearing object was photographed along with sequences of large moving vehicles leaving tracks in the lunar soil. I've made mention several times that when I had my show in California, one of my listeners came to me and gave me some money and an address at NASA and the number of a photograph. I ordered it. When it came back, I'm looking at a tracked vehicle moving across the surface of the moon at a time when there was no one on the moon. A huge, clearly photographed lake was photographed by Apollo 8 hidden on the backside of the moon with a spaceport near it, with what appears to be a long road in the distance. And that raises the question, why do some of the craters photographed on the moon have the exact same walls, floors, rims, and other details as atomic bomb craters, and frankly don't geologically look like the other craters formed by meteor impact? The Lamont Observatory has noted this fact. NASA, of course, has been silent. The government agency's policy of keeping UFOs secret from the general public is well known, has been documented in quite a number of books by famous astronomers like J. Allen Hynek, who investigated UFOs for the Air Force, Major Donald Kehoe, Timothy Good in his book Above Top Secret. I met him in Los Angeles, very nice young man. One unquestionably absolute expert, Christopher Kraft, who was director of the NASA tracking base in Houston during the Apollo moon missions, he revealed the following Apollo 11 conversation after he left his job at NASA. Now, this was astronauts Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin speaking from the moon. Those are giant things. No, 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 this is not an optical illusion. Nobody's going to believe this. Mission Control responded, what? What the hell's happening? What's wrong with you? The astronauts responded, they're here under the surface. Mission Control, what's there? Transmission was interrupted. Interference Control calling Apollo 11. The astronauts, we saw some visitors that were there for a while observing the instruments. Mission Control responded, repeat your last information. Astronauts. I say there were other spaceships. They lined up on the other side of the crater. Mission Control. Repeat. Astronauts. Let us sound this obita. And 625 to 5. Automatic relay connected. My hands are shaking so bad they can't do anything. Film it. God, if those damn cameras have picked up anything, what then? Mission Control. Have you picked up anything? Astronauts, I didn't have any film in hand. Three shots of the saucer or whatever they were ruining the film. Mission Control. Control here. Are you on your way? Is the uproar with the UFOs over? Astronauts, they've landed here. There they are, and they're watching us. Mission Control, the mirrors, have you set them up? Astronauts, yes, they're in the right place, but whoever made those spaceships surely can come tomorrow and remove them. Over and out. Well, this conversation took place during a mysterious 2-minute interruption in public transmissions. To prove us the truth, hundreds of independent civilian radio operators with powerful VHF equipment reported hearing the spaceship report from the Apollo moonwalkers. You know, the Apollo mission had two channels, the public channel and then a private channel, and they didn't want us to know what they were saying. It's logical if government agencies keep the existence of UFOs from space secret from the public. They discovered the home of the UFOs, it would obviously be secret also, and they would have to release cover stories about the moon to hide the truth. Problem has been the witnesses have talked to such agencies as the Department of Interplanetary Affairs. Why did NASA land a probe on the moon, its batteries went out and it stopped working supposedly forever, and then someone or something mysteriously turned it back on, repaired it, and it began working after a year of silence? When confronted with their photos of drones and roads and other artifacts, why does certain NASA spokespeople reply no comment? Subject to further analysis, not all the discoveries have been announced. You know, the double talk to keep him looking clean if the bubble ever burst big time. Plate 115, Apollo 16, image 16-18918. It has to be blown up to clearly see the large oval-shaped object inside a crater. NASA doesn't have a scientific explanation because this object doesn't fit into the natural terrain. Apollo 13 image, 13-60-8609, shows a large circular glowing UFO hovering over a very dark moon landscape. Definitely not a natural occurring item. Lunar Orbiter 5 image, HR1033, taken on the hidden side of the moon, shows a huge cylindrical-shaped object appearing to be parked on the moon with the front section and an opening on the side of the crater at Mare Muscovience. No scientific geological explanation. Apollo 15, image 1512640, shows a reported mining operation at the Humboldt crater. Three domes are shown at the inside the Archimedes crater. Then there's the question of why did NASA suddenly change its public policy? Was it the Apollo orbit around the moon that sent back photos of mining operations, domes, roads, a pyramid, and a spaceport, and lakes on the hidden side, dark side of the moon? Did they fear a possible alien invasion from that base and panic and fear the public would panic? Was it embarrassing to admit that all the billions of taxpayer dollars spent on the space program were wasted because the main goal that was to colonize the moon didn't work out because we were kicked off that world because we're screwed up? You know, we spent billions going. Left them, basically, if NASA's to be believed, never even thought about going back. That does raise some questions. Now, the ancient Babylonians, the Sumerians, the Egyptians, the Chaldeans, the Phoenicians, the Assyrians, the Aztecs, the Mayas, the Hindus, and the Tibetans all left written records claiming they were contacted by ancient astronauts who taught them the basics of civilization, but no technology that could be used against them. Modern historians don't tell us that because they believe the ancients weren't telling the truth, even though there's no documented evidence to prove the ancients wrote science fiction. Well, there's a lot more evidence that the ancients weren't telling the truth about contacts. How about the astronomical knowledge no primitive cultures could have possibly attained? Artifacts and ruins only a modern technology could create, and the appearance at its cultural peak with no prior history showing how it evolved. Whether it's the Nazis on the moon, aliens on the moon, even the Albanians on the moon, is irrelevant. What needs to be admitted by our government is that there is someone on the moon. Instead, everything is top secret. Nobody wants to admit anything. Many scientists in 1990, as well as through archaeologist explorers like Robert Chereau, Eugenie Savoy, Warren Smith, Peter Colosimo, Dr. George Hunt Williamson, there's a whole list of others that say they have absolute scientific proof of ancient astronauts based on ancient writings, ruins, artifacts, and historical contradictions that have been thoroughly analyzed. But one question, what does NASA say? No comment, nothing to see, move along. Farida Buskievet of the United Nations UFO Investigation and 8 former Army, Navy, or Air Force intelligence officers had top secret security clearances, as well as former NASA officials and ex-CIA agents who were interviewed all say they know there were ancient astronauts influencing earlier cultures. And even more interesting, there is scientific proof of ancient nuclear warfare on this planet. There's evidence left by radiated ruins and skeletons and nuclear bomb craters on Earth from ancient times. Buildings and objects with that nuked look, well, as carbon dating and radiation tests. If ancient astronauts could get to Earth from other solar systems, it'd be a piece of cake when we get to the moon. It's a very thin atmosphere. There is an atmosphere. I assure you there is. An absence of violent weather would make it much easier for construction and mining, not to mention its absence of environmental contamination and large empires of locals who sometimes tend to be hostile. Anybody wondered why there have been no astronauts sent to the moon since Eugene Cernan on December 13, 1972? Why was the moon program suddenly terminated after so much publicized success? Since when does the government stop a program it's funded? What sense does that make? Why did NASA scientists and spokesmen of the 60s brag about how we're going to establish space bases, mining operations, and colonies on the moon in the 80s? Why did they change those plans? Now, the accepted cause is lack of money from Congress, but why was there lack of money? We got money for everything else. Contrary to popular belief, the Apollo program only cost less than 1% of the budget. Considering the billions spent on defense, the military advantage of having a base on the moon will be unbelievably important. Why were officials of the 50s and 60s so publicly afraid the Soviet military would beat us to the moon? Did that fear suddenly go away after we got there and walked around a few times? Why did the Soviets themselves never land on the moon? If we could do it, certainly they could do it. But they never did. Could it be that the moon actually belongs to someone else? Could it be that the moon and, to a certain extent, Mars are actually foreign countries and therefore somebody else's property? They don't want us intruding? You know, the extraterrestrial activity that's been observed by the Apollo moon astronauts is, I guess you could say, it's exhibit one in the growing alien threat. And there have been other similar activities observed on other planets in the solar system. Now, there are some researchers who believe that a breakaway civilization has emerged within our society that advanced anti-gravity technology, pollutionless technology, free energy, and ability to be able to manipulate DNA to extend human lifespan is all currently available to an elite group on this planet. Now, lest you laugh at the very idea, there is an elite group that operates behind the scenes. I've written about it in several of my books. I've got my newest one, which is the third volume of the Shadow War series. It's called The Men Behind the Curtains. And it shows they have operated totally outside the law, and that's okay because they're special people. This group has allegedly created for themselves a completely different capability to go into space, utilize resources, maybe even settle on other planets. Now, lest you think the whole thing is outlandish, Nikola Tesla had developed the ability to send energy through the air. His laboratory did not have any wiring, but it was certainly lit. And when he died, agents of the U.S. government came in and took every piece of paper they could find. It's never been released to his heirs. You know, as Mark Twain had made the comment that I find rather appropriate, don't let schooling interfere with your education. Things that I were taught, God. When I got commissioned as an Army officer, that was back in the 70s. And I saw technology then that was beyond anything I thought existed. Then when I took a busload of people to Rachel, Nevada, which is right outside Area 51, the stealth bomber had been flying there for 3 years before it was ever revealed to the public. Any technology we have seen or used is already obsolete. Now, according to NASA's official website, primary launch sites for expendable launch vehicles are Cape Canaveral, which is located adjacent to Kennedy Space Center, Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. NASA's Wallops Island, the Virginia Flight Facility, Kwajalein Atoll in the Republic of the Marshall Islands in the North Pacific, Kodiak Island, Alaska, the Odyssey Platform, Pacific Ocean. That one's mostly used for communications launches. Now, that's the official list. There are other sites, which a secret space program can easily operate from, totally undetected. These include Edwards Air Force Base in California, Area 51, which of course has a lot of unusual lights that fly above it, and a naval support facility at Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean. Excuse me. And this assumes that a spacecraft would need to re-enter Earth's atmosphere at all to land. What if that city ship that I mentioned earlier was built in orbit and has remained in orbit? Any runway on the ground would become irrelevant. Now, the runway at Edwards Air Force Base is the longest in the world at 39,600 feet. That's 7.5 miles. Area 51 runway at Groom Lake is 23,270 feet. That's 4.4 miles. And Naval Support Facility Diego Garcia has two parallel 12,000-foot-long runways. That's 2.3 miles. Vandenberg Air Force Base, which is 55 miles northwest of Santa Barbara, has a 15,000-foot-long runway. That's 2.8 miles. Its location just a few miles from the northern Pacific Ocean makes it possible to easily launch satellites into polar orbit, like the Kennedy Space Center. And this, along with its location relative to the jet stream, makes Vandenberg a good site to launch reconnaissance satellites. So we've got the ability to launch both military as well as non-military satellites into polar orbits. In fact, the space probe Clementine was launched from there using a recycled Titan II ICBM. Now, details on launches from Vandenberg are withheld until they're approved for public release. Prior to the launch of a classified payload, the exact launch time is kept secret till about T-minus 18 to T-minus 4 hours. The launch window is also secret and not made public. Instead of announcing a launch window, Air Force announces a launch period. Now, Vandenberg is actually a closed facility. Those without base access credentials can only enter the base when they're sponsored by authorized personnel. The visibility of rockets and missiles launched from Vandenberg varies greatly. Some launches are difficult to see from relatively short distances. Others are visible for several hundred miles. Well, in 72, Vandenberg was selected as the West Coast Space Shuttle launch and landing site. Space Launch Complex 6 originally was built for the Abandoned Manned Orbital Laboratory project, so it was modified for the shuttle. Over $4 billion was spent on the modifications to the complex, the construction of the infrastructure. Well, this raises some interesting questions. $4 billion spent modifying a facility that's not going to be used. Does that make any sense in the broad scheme of military operations? Now, in 2006, Vandenberg assumed a new role with the creation of the Joint Functional Component Command for Space. In other words, Space Command. Now, according to its founding commander, Lieutenant General William Shelton, prime mission directive in the Joint Functional Component Command for Space is to ensure our freedom of action in space while preventing an adversary use of space against us. Well, that sounds all well and good. The problem with all this high-sounding rhetoric is it's very clearly window dressing. There's a whole lot more going on behind the scenes. I've read all kinds of information about the fact there exists a space fleet. Now, nobody's really sure who the space fleet belongs to, but there seems to be a whole lot more going on than we've been led to understand. And we spend a whole lot of time debunking, there's one guy locally who is always strutting around talking about he debunked this and debunked that, and he wouldn't know a debunk if you walked up and bit him, but that's neither here nor there. The big thing look at it this way. If we obtained a crashed UFO and we reverse engineered the technology and created advanced aircraft capabilities, the Soviets would immediately go on red alert. They'd be positive we were going to attack. There would be all kinds of lunatics demanding we return it to the aliens. Remember, we're benevolent space brothers. When I was in California, I heard all kinds of whack jobs talking about that. And the problem with most people who demonstrate from any position, they wanted, there's so many people who want to be known as activists. They are out there fighting for a cause and you're a reactionary Nazi because you don't believe in their cause. If you watch the news, whenever anybody disagrees with somebody in a position of authority, the person in the position of authority is a Nazi or a racist. So I can understand why the government will classify everything. Number one, there's people, the religious fanatic community, if it's not in the Bible, it's not true, would go on the warpath if it was announced that there were really were aliens and UFOs were spaceships. The Robertson panel laid that out very clearly back in the 60s. And that's been the position of our government ever since that report came out. In fact, there's every possibility that Secretary of Defense Forrestal was killed when he wanted to reveal it. Now, there's no question, no matter what you do, you can't discount the fact at the end of World War II, German research was so far ahead of us, it wasn't even funny. In fact, the reason we gave Berlin to the Russians was because the closest U.S. Army, Patton's, was sent dashing across Germany to capture a series of research facilities in the Harz Mountains. One of them was so classified, we're really not sure what they were doing, but an SS regiment, what was left of it, and their families went into this underground facility and dynamited the entrance behind them. What's interesting is when we dug it out, there was nobody there. What were they researching? There's no way to really know, but keep in mind what Socrates said. Those who fail to learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Now, something happened in 1972-73. I heard rumors from folks I knew in the military, but nobody could substantiate anything. Now, the excuse for scaling back the space program, as I said, were budget cuts, which forced NASA to suspend plans for ambitious, expensive missions to many destinations throughout the solar system. Back to 2013, White House budget request for NASA kept it at $1.2 billion for the Space Agency's Planetary Science Program. That was a 20% cut from the 2012 allotment of $1.5 billion. NASA officials say this funding picture leaves no room for multi-billion dollar flagship planetary missions. And that's a departure for the space agency, which has launched roughly one such effort every decade since the 70s. I mean, the Cassini spacecraft study of the Saturn system and the grand tour of the solar system by the twin Voyager spacecraft. And there, we're told that there's nothing else being developed. Of course, there was the $2.5 billion Mars Science Laboratory that dropped the Curiosity rover on the Martian surface in August of 2012 to investigate the red planet's potential to host life as we know it. Now, speaking of Mars, I listened to a tape when I was in England years ago that purported to be the landing of a craft on Mars in the early 60s. It was part of some material I was given on something called Alternative 3. I mentioned it the other night. Supposedly, we have an existing base on Mars. Now, what's interesting, when they send all these to the moon and to Mars, they don't have our state-of-the-art camera equipment on them. Most of them, the camera equipment is not the best we could have sent. Now, we had the Hubble Space Telescope. We've got the James Webb Space Telescope. It's supposed to be the successor to the agency's Hubble Telescope. It's going to cost $8.8 billion and allow us to see the vast universe. Now, it does, when we can spend billions of dollars doing everything else under the sun, when Schumer and Pelosi run around screaming they need billions to take care of all the folks who want to come here, when we can't take care of our own people, but we're going to take care of them. When Mars and the moon could, in fact, be made habitable, does it make any sense that we ignore them completely when we have the ability to go there? Well, NASA says it's not giving up on the planetary exploration. It's just scaling back. Focusing on missions that might cost 100 or 200 or 300 million rather than $2 billion. They're calling those medium class missions. Well, it raises a large number of questions that rather than answer, the government ignores. If we can come up with stealth technology, what else is out there? If any technology we are able to use is obsolete by the time we use it, what else have we developed that we're not telling people about? You know, also ask yourself this, how do we go from horse and buggies to landing on the moon in less than 70 years? When for thousands of years before that, horse and buggy was state of the art. Then one day somebody said, well, let's go fly to the moon now. Then the period of 1958 to 1969 is another interesting period to look at. There was an incredible leap in technology. From the launch of the first satellite into Earth orbit, January 31st, 1958, to the moon landing, July 20th, 1969. But what's taken place in 69? International Space Station and a telescope in Earth orbit. The shuttle missions that have stopped. An occasional interplanetary probe for those that are interested in what's going on. After 11 years of unbelievably advanced breakthroughs, we just stopped. Even the Russians, who were the primary competitors involved in the 1960 space race. They've scaled back what they're doing. So ask yourself, what's the reason for this? Well, let's call it apathy. It's almost as if we're suddenly afraid to leave the friendly confines of our comfortable cocoon here on Earth. Has our appetite for space exploration and discovery disappeared? The enthusiasm and sense of urgency that once existed is gone? Actually, we're in greater danger of extinction now than ever before. And yet, instead of finding a way to expand the human race to the other planets in this system, we're kind of ho-hum. But why have we suddenly become so complacent? What happened to our desire to reach for the stars? Looks kind of suspicious to me. This attitude can only lead one to conclude that A, there's no concern among our leaders for the future of humanity's existence outside of Earth, or B, there's a master plan actively in place to preserve humanity's continuance, a secret space program funded as a highly classified black project, which may explain why there's not the sea of money for NASA's more public operations. Now, April 13, 2012, NASA put out a call for ideas for the next Mars mission, which was supposed to be last year. Fine print. The cost can't be astronomical, and the idea has to move the country closer to landing humans on the red planet in the 2030s. Now, that call for ideas came 2 months after NASA pulled out of a partnership with the European Space Agency on two missions targeted for 2016 and 2018. The 2018 mission was supposed to be the first step toward hauling Martian soil and rocks back to Earth for a detailed study. A lot of questions. We're going to talk more about UFOs tomorrow night, but for now, we run out of time once again. Until tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Mountain, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.